The Apostle Paul wrote in the book of Hebrews, chapter 9, verse 13, "For if the blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of a heifer, sprinkling those who have been defiled, sanctify," that is, make them holy for the cleansing of the flesh, "how much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God?" The ashes of a red heifer is a ceremony in the Bible and the book of Numbers. You find it in chapter 19 of the book of Numbers. I'd like to read it to you. It's a very interesting and a sort of strange thing, but you have to understand it the way it's written and the way what its meaning was. The book of Numbers, chapter 19, "Then the Eternal spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, 'This is the statute of the law which the Eternal has commanded, saying, speak to the sons of Israel that they bring you an unblemished red heifer.'" Now, first of all, a red heifer by itself, you know, that some of the Jews later got to think, if there are black hairs on that, that's not a totally red heifer. It has to be a red heifer. So it's very unusual. It's a very rare animal in the first place. "Bring you a red heifer, unblemished," that is, can't have any marks, can't have any scars, it can't have any, doesn't limp, it doesn't do anything, it doesn't have any defects, "in which there is no defect, and on which a yoke has never been placed." They've never had anything put on it. So it's a red heifer. It's a fully female. Now, this is one of the few where it's a female offering, okay? The red heifer. "You shall give it to the Eleazar the priest, and it shall be brought outside the camp." Once again, an allusion. Jesus Christ was crucified where? Outside the camp. Allusion. "And it shall be slaughtered in his presence." Now, the priest doesn't do the slaughtering. It is slaughtered in his presence. So they bring it to the priest. He's outside the camp. And it's slaughtered right there. They cut it, they kill it. "Next, Eleazar the priest shall take some of its blood." Once they pierce it and the blood begins to flow, he shall take some of the blood with his finger and sprinkle some of its blood toward the front of the tent of meeting 7 times. Now, he's outside the camp. The tent of meeting is inside the camp. And he's facing the tent of meeting, and he's sprinkling some of the blood toward it 7 times. But he's outside the camp. "Then the heifer, after he sprinkles it, shall be burned in his sight." Again, he doesn't do the burning. It's burned in front of him. The high priest is there. They burn the heifer. They burn its hide. They burn its flesh. They burn its blood. They burn its refuse. And, in other words, all the entrails, everything is burned. Completely, sort of like a cremation, a complete cremation. "The priest then shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet material," it's like a thread of some sort, "and cast it into the midst of the burning heifer." So here's hyssop, here's scarlet, here's some cedar wood, and they throw it. While the heifer is being burned and consumed, they throw that into the midst. "The priest then shall then wash his clothes, bathe his body in water, and afterward come into the camp." He can't come into the camp till he washes his clothes, bathes his body in water afterward. "But the priest shall be, even then, unclean until evening time," the start of the next day, he's considered to be unclean. "The one who burns it shall also wash his clothes in water, bathe his body in water, and shall be unclean until evening." He's considered, again, unclean till the next day, till the beginning of the new day. "Now, a man who is clean," he has to be a clean, shall gather up the ashes. Now, okay, so you bring somebody else. So these guys are already unclean. They can't touch the ashes anymore. The ashes are there. He gathers up the ashes of the heifer and deposits them outside the camp in a clean place, something pure. And the congregation of the sons of Israel shall keep it as water to remove impurity. It is purification from sin. Now, so this is in a sense a sin offering, a sin process, purification from sin. The one who gathers the ashes of the heifer. Now, the ashes are used for purification. Okay? Now, the ashes are all sitting here. Okay, they're used for purification. But what kind of purification? We'll get to that in a minute. Okay? The one who gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes. And again, he shall be unclean till evening. And it shall be a perpetual statute to the sons of Israel and to the alien who journeys among them. The one who touches the corpse. Now here's why these ashes are used. The one who touches a corpse of any person shall be unclean for 7 days. Now, there are a lot of things that were whereby in the Old Testament rituals that you could be unclean, but you usually were all unclean for a day. You know, you're unclean for not today. And you, if you did this, you. But if you touch a human corpse, mostly a human body, you shall be unclean for 7 days, not just for 1 day, 7 of them. And death brought on uncleanness. Death brought uncleanness on people. Take a look at a few other scriptures here for just a moment, so you'll see how the emphasis is and why they had this statute. Take a look at Numbers chapter 5, 1 through 3. This is referring to the command to, here it is, Numbers 5. The Eternal said to Moses, that's verse 1, command the Israelites to send away from the camp anyone who has an infectious skin disease, I'm reading this from the New International Version, or a discharge of any kind, or who is ceremonially unclean because of a dead body. A dead body. Now, let's face it, in life, I don't know if you call it lucky or just, I just didn't happen, it just never happened. I don't know if it's luck or not luck. I don't know if it's good or it's bad, okay? But I know people who have walked into a room and there was somebody dead. Somebody had died. Or they were by the deathbed of a loved one and they were there while and when they just expired their last breath, and they died right there. They're there. Death is part of our world. It's a part of the life that we, you know, that we live. Everyone's going to die. So here you have a statute. If you're there when your loved one dies, guess what happens to you? You're unclean for how many days? 7. It's not like, you know, somebody ate some unclean meat and he was done unclean till even, or that, you know, in the ceremonial. These are all ceremonially now, you know. But 7 days unclean. This is a symbol for something. We'll talk about what that symbol is. So here in Numbers chapter 5, hey, you command the Israelites there to send away out of the camp anybody with an infectious disease or someone who was ceremonially unclean because of a dead body. You were there when that person died. You touched that body. You were there in that presence of a dead person. Numbers chapter 6. The next chapter of Numbers. Numbers 5, now Numbers 6. Dropping down to verse 5. Throughout the period, this is talking of the Nazarite. The Nazarite vow. The person, Samson was a Nazarite. There were other Nazarites, okay? They took the vow, and they, you know, Samson got all this power and strength, you know, because of his vow. Throughout the period of his separation, that is the person who is a Nazarite, to the eternal, he must not go near a dead body. So when a person takes the Nazarite vow, and by the way, a man or a woman could take this, he is not allowed to go near. So if someone says to you, hey, your parents are sick or something, and they're just about to die, he's not allowed to go near a dead body. Even, listen, verse 7, even if his own father or mother or brother or sister dies, he must not make himself ceremonially unclean on account of them, because the symbol of his separation to God is on his head. That is, he has the long hair. Throughout the period of his separation, he is consecrated to the eternal. Dropping down to verse 9. I'm reading this from the New International Version, which is real, you know, more flows easier. If someone dies suddenly in his presence. Now, I'm a Nazarite, right? I took the Nazarite vow, and I think you're fine. You're doing fine. We're all out on a hike, and all of a sudden you just collapse and die in my presence. I don't even have a chance to get away from it. If someone dies suddenly in his presence, thus defiling the hair he has dedicated, he must shave his head on the day of his cleansing. The seventh day, he's got again. He dies 7 days, he's unclean on the day of his cleansing. Then on the eighth day, he must bring two doves to the two or two young pigeons to the priest at the entrance of the tent of meeting. That's the place where God meets with him. The priest is to offer one as a sin offering, the other as a burnt offering, to make atonement for him because he has sinned by being in the presence of a dead body. It's like a sin to be in the presence of a dead body. That same day he is to consecrate his head. He must dedicate himself to the eternal for a period of his separation and must bring a year-old male lamb as a guilt offering. The previous days do not count because he became defiled during his separation. Now, Chapter 9 of Numbers. Chapter 9 of Numbers, dropping down to verse 6. But some of them, this is the Israelites, but some of them could not celebrate the Passover on that day because they were, I'm reading from the New International Version, ceremonially unclean on account of a dead body. So they came to Moses and Aaron that same day, and day seven, on the same day seven, and said to Moses, we have become unclean, this is verse 7, we have become unclean because of a dead body. But why should we be kept from presenting the Lord's offering with the Israelites at an appointed time? Of course, you know, Moses said we got to have a second Passover. So you see how being in the presence of a dead body, they had to have a form of purification. All right, let's come back to verse chapter 19. Okay, he shall, the one who touches the corpse of any person shall be unclean for 7 days. That one shall purify himself from uncleanness with water on the third day and on the seventh day. And then he shall be clean. But if he does not purify himself on the third day and on the seventh day, he will not be clean. So you're unclean for 7 days. The 2 days on which you're to purify are the third and the seventh. Anyone who touches, now verse 13, anyone who touches a corpse, a body of the man, of a man who has died, or probably a woman, and does not purify himself, defiles the tabernacle of the eternal, that person shall be cut off from Israel, because the water for impurity was not sprinkled on him. He shall be unclean. His uncleanness is still on him. So You're unclean. You can't come into the camp. You can't be around the tabernacle. You can't be in the fellowship of these people. Why? This is the law when a man dies then in a tent. Okay, now, if a person dies in a tent, in his house, in you know where he lives, you know, people lived in tents in those days, dies in a tent in his place. Everyone who comes into the tent and everyone who comes, who is in the tent already shall be unclean for 7 days. Somebody's sick. They die. You walk into the tent. He just died. You walk into the tent. What are you? Unclean for 7 days. You were there with him when he was sick and he was now dying. What are you? Unclean, ceremonially unclean for 7 days. Also, every open vessel which has no covering tied down on it shall be unclean. Verse 16, also, everyone who is in the open field who touches one who has been slain with a sword or with a bone or a grave shall be unclean for 7 days. You walk outside. What is your duty to do? You're going to help your mother. You're going to help your father. You're going to help your brother, your sister. You're not going to leave them. You're going to be there. But you're going to be unclean for 7 days, and there's only one way to be purified. We'll talk about that. Here's the purification process. And don't you have a civil duty? You're walking along a field, and here's somebody dead in the field. So maybe they were cut with a knife and they were murdered. You're going to want to drag that body or help somebody. Yes, absolutely. But the people who touch the body are going to be unclean for 7 days. A clean person, now here's what happens. Then for the unclean person, this is verse 17, they shall take some of the ashes of the burnt purification from sin. It's the ashes of purification from sin, because to be in the presence of death, in a sense, is a sin. Not symbolically sin. You didn't do anything bad, but it's symbolically sinful. And flowing water shall be added to them. Now, what did they do? They had this, they killed this red heifer. They got all these ashes over here. They put it in a clean place, preserve those ashes. Okay? You don't put it where they can blow away. You know, you can put it where they can contain, and they're there. So every time somebody is unclean for that, here's what happens. Verse 18, a clean person shall take hyssop and dip it in the water and sprinkle it on the tent and all the furnishings. So he's going to take some of those ashes. He's going to put them, they're going to be dipped in the water. He's going to take that water and sprinkle it on the tent, on all the furnishings where someone died, okay? And on the persons who were there in that tent when someone died, and on the one who touched the bone of the one slain, or on the one who died, or on the grave. So you're out there, you find somebody dead, you pull the body up, you're there, you notify people that, hey, there's somebody was slain here, and they're going to make an investigation. If there was a murder, they're going to try to find out. But you now have to go, and you have to be unclean, and you have to have these things sprinkled. Then the clean person shall sprinkle, verse 19. On verse 19, then the clean person shall sprinkle on the unclean on the third day and on the seventh day. Now, it doesn't have to be a priest. A priest is not, just any person who is clean can take those ashes, going to sprinkle on you on the third day and on the seventh day. Any person who is clean on the third and on the seventh day, and on the seventh day he shall be purified, purify himself from uncleanness, and he shall wash his clothes, he shall bathe himself in water, and he shall then be clean by evening after the seventh day. But the man who is unclean and does not purify himself from uncleanness, that person shall be cut off from the midst of the assembly, because he has defiled the sanctuary of the Eternal. The water for impurity has not been sprinkled on him. He is unclean. So it shall be a perpetual statute for them. And he who sprinkles the water for impurity shall wash his clothes, and he touches the water for impurity shall be unclean. Now look at this. And it shall be a perpetual statute. And he who sprinkles the water for impurity. Okay, you're unclean. I'm clean because you touch the dead body. I get the hyssop and the water for impurity. I have the ashes of the red heifer in the water. I sprinkle you on the third day. I sprinkle you on the seventh day. What happens to me? He who touches the water for impurity shall be unclean until evening. So even the water that's supposed to wash you and make you clean makes me unclean because I touched it. Furthermore, anything that the unclean person touches shall be unclean, and the person who touches it shall be clean, unclean until evening. So if I'm the unclean person because of a dead body, I touch this and you touch it, you're only unclean for one day if you touch that. But I'm unclean for 7 days because I was around a dead body. So it's a very powerful thing. Now I want you to notice what Jesus did. Where did Jesus put himself in regard? Now he knew these laws, he knew them. But let's take a look at Luke chapter 7, dropping down to verse 11. Luke 7. Soon afterward, Jesus went to a town called Nain, N-A-I-N, and his disciples and a large crowd, this is Luke 7, beginning in verse 11, and a large crowd went along with him. And as he approached the town, a dead person was being carried out. Somebody died. Who was this person? Well, it happened to be the only son of his mother. And she was a widow. So she had one son, she's a widow. The crowd was large. They were coming out from the town. They were with her. When the Lord Jesus saw her, he saw this widow. She's crying. Here's her son. She lost her only son. His heart went out to her, and he said to her, don't cry. Don't cry. Now, it didn't mean you're not allowed to cry because your son died. That would be silly. Of course she's allowed to. Her son died. She's crying. When he said, don't cry, he meant, you don't have to worry about this. Then he went up and touched the coffin. Touched the coffin of the dead person. Where does that put him? Based on the law of the red heifer, he's unclean for 7 days, right? He touched the coffin and those carrying it stood still. They're like, what in the world? Because all of a sudden they just stopped. And he's touching it. He said, young man, he's talking to the dead corpse. Young man, I say to you, get up. The dead man sat up, verse 15, and began to talk. Now, what happens? You're dead. You're in the presence of a dead person. And all of a sudden, you are unclean, right? The dead person makes you unclean. But the dead person now goes from death to life. Death just disappeared. There is no death. What happens now? I'm not unclean now, am I? Are we unclean now? When there's no more dead person, the dead person's now gone. The person has now got life. So what made you unclean was death, but now death has disappeared because there's life here. So he sat up and he began to talk. The dead man sat up, began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. That's why he said, don't cry. And they were all filled with awe and praised God. They said, "A great prophet has appeared among us. God has come to help his people." This news about Jesus spread throughout Judea and the surrounding country. That's Luke chapter 7, verses 11 through 17. Now in Luke chapter 8, here's another situation. When Jesus returned from the crowd, he returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. You know, people, he made miracles, he did things, he made food for people. There, a man named Jairus, he was a ruler of the synagogue, came up to Jesus and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his household because his only daughter, a girl about 12 years old, was dying. He heard about Jesus, "My daughter's dying. You know, Lord," he falls at Jesus' feet, "please help me, please come to my house, my daughter's dying." Well, they start on the way, and the crowds were coming around Jesus, and you know the story between chapter 8, verse 42, and chapter 8, verse 49. The next seven verses tell you about this woman who had an issue of blood, and she sees Jesus, and she said, "If I could just touch the hem of his garment, I know I'll be healed," and you have all that story. But coming back to the story of Jairus, the ruler of the synagogue, verse 49, Luke 8, verse 49, while Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue ruler, and said, "Your daughter is dead. Don't bother the teacher anymore." He's asking, "Your daughter died now. You know, we've been watching." He probably said, "Hey, watch him. I'm going to go find this man. Maybe he can save my daughter." Well, they come running up. "Your daughter's dead. Don't worry about it now. Don't bother him. Don't have him come to the house." But Jesus heard this. And so he said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Just believe, and she will be healed." So verse 51, when he arrived at the house of Jairus, what do you do when you come into the house of someone who died? What happens to you? 7 days of uncleanness. Once again, Jesus challenges. He just comes right up and does it. He comes into the house of Jairus. He did not let anyone go in except Peter, James, and John. And the child's father and mother, he had, "Come on, you, the two of you, come on in. And James and John, you come with me, and let's go." Peter, James, John, the three of them, and Jesus. Meanwhile, all the other people were waiting and wailing and mourning about her. They're on the outside of the house. They don't want to go in. They don't want to be unclean for 7 days, I guess. And Jesus looking at her, mourning for her, and all the people were wailing. "Stop wailing," Jesus said. As he's going in there, they're crying. "Stop wailing. She's not dead. She's asleep." Well, then they began to laugh at him. "Oh, yeah. We know she's dead." Knowing that they knew she was dead. But he took her by the hand and he said, "Talitha." In Aramaic, it means little girl. You know, little girl, little child, little girl, get up. Her spirit returned, and at once she stood up. Then Jesus told them to give her something to eat. "Hey, she needs something to eat. She's tired." Her parents were astonished, but he ordered them not to tell anybody what happened. I told them she was asleep. You tell them she was asleep. That was it. Just don't tell them what happened here. I said she was asleep. Now, were they unclean? No, because again, what happens? You're unclean in a dead body, but then it went from death again to life, right? It went from, she was dead, but now she's alive. What happens to the uncleanness? Why is death, in these pictures of the book of Numbers, in that story of Numbers, why is death so obnoxious to God? Why does he make it such a sin? It's a sin, so to speak, symbolically sinful to be in the presence of death. Because it really is the wages of sin. Death is the consequence, the crowning great consequence of sin in this whole world. Sin not only spoils life while it lasts, but it brings it to this painful, premature end. Sin. So God hates death. The wages of sin is death, Romans 6:23. You heard it also in the sermonette. In Genesis, what did God say to Adam and Eve? I'm going to give you all the trees, but don't eat of this one, because in the day you eat of that tree, you shall surely die. God hates death. He didn't create man for death. What did he create us for? For life. He breathed into man's nostrils the breath of life. He wants men to live. And death is the enemy. Death is, God hates it. Paul called it the last enemy to be destroyed. It's death. He hates it. You should hate it. I should hate it. It's something that God hates, and it's obnoxious to him. And the day that you eat thereof, you will surely die. And Adam, death reigned from Adam all the way to Noah, and so on, as Paul says in the book of Romans, because of that sin. Death is expressive of the consequences of sin. That's why he says, the sprinkling of a red heifer, the ashes, now you have to take that and be unclean for the 7 days. In the book of Hebrews, when we read this passage, let's read it again, Hebrews 9, verses 13 and 14. For if the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer, sprinkling those who have been defiled, sanctify for the cleansing of the flesh, how much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works? Dead. What are the works? They're not live. They're dead. Cleanse your conscience from the dead works to serve the living God. Dead. You know, dead things stink. They do. Dead things stink. You meet a carcass, you ever see a carcass, it's dead? We hold our noses, you know. Every now and then, you know, you have a house, sometimes a rat gets up in there. Rats have a way of getting into places. They get into places, they can get into something, and then they can't get out. You know, they fall down in between walls or joints or something like that, and they die. And when they die, they stink. And there's a period of time, you know, wow, what is that odor? You know, where is that coming from? I think it's a dead rat somewhere. You know, can fall down in a wall if you've ever been in a house with a dead animal. Now, you know that dead animal stinks. Dead things stink. Dead carcasses stink. We hold our noses. Sin stinks. Blasphemy stinks. Profanity stinks. Pride stinks. Envy stinks. Hatred stinks. Malice, covetousness. These stink. You hold your nose, and God has to hold his nose when we commit those kinds of sins of dead works. They stink before God. Therefore, they should be detested by us. You know, if you're walking along and you see something dead, it's sort of abhorrent to you. You know what I mean? There's a dead rat, you tend to get away from it. You don't like it. People don't like to be in the presence of death. They don't want to be. If you see a dead body, or you see something dead, you just don't want to be around it very much. It's already died. It's already dead. Dead people are often forgotten. Fact is, in the book of Psalm, chapter 31, verse 12, it says, I am as a dead man, out of mind. I'm out of people's minds. Dead people go. If you don't see somebody on a regular basis, you don't contact them, you don't see them, you don't hear from them. After a while, the memories fade. You have to keep looking at pictures and reminding yourself of them, and because you don't have them talking to you on a regular basis. You don't have them coming up to you. You don't have them being around you. They're not refreshing your memory of them. Even if you haven't seen somebody in a long time, when you see them again, they're alive. They refresh your memory of them. But dead people don't have any refreshing of your memory. So, as the psalmist said, dead people are forgotten. So let our minds get rid of these dead works, the world's ways, the pleasures of the world, the pleasures of the flesh that are sinful. Let these dead things not be remembered. What is dead has to be buried, right? You bury what's dead. You see a dead squirrel, you don't just leave it out there, because you know that a dead body gathers diseases and things happen to it. And as it rots, it decays, all kinds of bacteria go, and it's not healthy. You don't want to be around it. And human bodies the same way. They breed diseases, so you want to get rid of that. And so we bury it, we cremate it, we do whatever we do, we bury it. Paul, Abraham, a quote from Abraham in Genesis chapter 23, verse 4, he says, when he's buying this place, he says, give me a place to bury my dead out of my sight. That's what he said. Idolatry, blasphemy, on all things that are dead like that, have to be buried. Where did you bury your dead? Where did you bury all your dead sins? In that pool, in that baptismal tank. Is that when you got baptized and they dipped you into that tank, you left them. You buried your dead. Yes, dead things are abhorred by us. We shun things that are dead. We get away from them. And when a body is dead, it seems to be heavier. A person that's alive, you want to pick up a person who's living, that person seems, if you pick me up, they can help you, they can put their arm around you, and then you pick them up. But a dead body is so limp that it actually is heavier weight. So these dead things lie heavier on our consciences. Certainly Cain had a heavy conscience. Judas had a heavy conscience. They're not able to bear that intolerable burden of sin, of deceit, of betrayal. God hates death. That's why he had this statement. And he says, now look, this is what we're talking about. The Lamb, we're talking about the Lamb of God. We're talking about God's Lamb. You're a Passover Lamb. If the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling those who were defiled serve for the sanctifying of just flesh, so you can come back into camp after 7 days, how much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit and offered himself up through the eternal Spirit, without blemish. He's without blemish. He's purer than the red heifer, without blemish. How much more will the blood of Christ cleanse your conscience from dead works? Let's get rid of the dead works, things that don't work. Dead works don't work. They don't work well. The thing is dead. Batteries that are dead, they don't work. Things that are dead don't work. Cleanse your conscience from the dead works so that you can turn around and serve not a dead God. People who worship idols serve dead gods. All their works are dead. All these ceremonies that are useless, stupid ceremonies that just, you know, just for the heck of it, you know, they're dead. Idols are dead. We serve not idols, not dead idols, not dead gods, but to serve whom? The living God. How much more if that those ashes ceremonially, because God hates death. Death is our enemy. God hated so much that he knew the way to solve the problem was to send his only son. And that's why the great statement in John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him shall not, and I don't mean just a cursory, I say it, you know, we give you the words and you repeat it because but they're not in your heart, they're not in your mind, that whosoever believes, has a faith and believes into him shall not perish, shall not die, shall not die forever, but have everlasting life. The cure for death was so dramatic, God hated it so much that he had to send the most precious thing he had. The one who became, who ended, you know, in the beginning was the Word. The Word became, was with God, the Word was God, and all things were in the beginning, all things were created by him. Without him was nothing that was created that was created, but the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. God sent him to cure, because the wages of sin is death. And God gave us the free gift. The gift of God is eternal life through Christ Jesus our Lord. We'll talk more about the power of the Lamb, what he's done for you, what he's done for me, in our next message.